On this episode, we discuss Seventh Son.
Dan, I didn't see Sons 1 through 6. Will I understand what happens in the movie?
You will not.
Son 5's the best.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And I'm Stuart Wellington.
Trademark sound effect. I'm Elliot Kalin.
We're all here together. It's been a little while.
It's been like 2 weeks.
I don't know.
Same amount of time between the
You know why it feels like it was it's been a long time?
Because you're drunk.
Well, possibly. But we did those two live shows, and then we did an episode right afterwards, and I got used to having you pals around me all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, you know, even though, you know, I'm kind of under the weather, like, I got
too,
this,
man.
Yeah, we got,
yep. Hey, up top.
Yeah.
No, under, down below.
But when you guys called me up today to say, hey, do I want to come out and podcast? I'm like, fuck it, man, let's do this.
Well, what happens is we put
I'm
up,
trying to build this kind of story around it.
We put up the stew signal, which is a big silhouette of a can of beer with Angus Scrim, you know. Pouring it.
It's a pretty elaborate silhouette.
Oh, and he's ripping his own ding dong off. It's all in silhouette.
When we project that onto clouds, I'm amazed that it still reads.
Had to be a very cloudy night.
Yeah.
Then we set out the beer and open it, and the smell carries stew over.
Yeah, we set out the beer, and we put a box with a stick propping that box up.
And I floated along the smell waves like Monterey Jack.
That's right. And
the cheese character. He's named after his object of his desires.
The cheese character. He's a mouse. From Disney's Rescue Rangers.
No, but it's crazy that he's called Monterey Jack since he just wants to eat cheese all the time. Like, they don't call you Chicken Kalen.
Maybe they should.
Okay.
No, every time someone calls me chicken, I have to fight them in a drag race.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like my grandfather and my great-grandfather.
Eventually you'll learn.
I don't,
but only after some adventures in the past.
Yeah, and the future. Anyway, Biff stole a sports almanac. Do I care about that? Because I don't really care about sports.
It was a Oscars predictions.
We got to go back and stop him.
So for this show, we watched...
So what do we do on the show normally for the newbies?
For the newbos, we watch a bad movie.
Sounds
and we
like
talk
a racial
about
slur,
it.
But it's not...
That's our M.O., modus operandi.
That's our monster opera.
So for this
That's
episode,
our Mamie Eisenhower.
Our Mr. Octopus.
Yep. Our malted ocelot.
Mo Money starring Damon Wayans.
No.
Stacey
no.
Dash.
No.
So we watched... a movie tonight called...
Stretch it out. We got to fill the time.
Seventh Son.
Seventh Son.
It starred Jeff Bridges and some guy.
Some guy. And a...
generic guy.
And a guy. Andrew Guy.
Julianne Moore.
Plays a morphing but dreadlocked dragon lady.
Dragon queen witch. And Kit Harington.
Is in it.
Ex Machina herself.
Very early.
Robo Girl.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Robo Girl's in it, too.
What's her name?
Alicia Vikander.
Yep.
And Olivia Williams is in it.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
And in the role of guy who's in science fiction and fantasy movies, Jimon Hounsou.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Now, here's something I'm going to say about this movie before we get into the plot. When I saw that it starred Jeff Bridges and some dude, I assumed Jeff Bridges would be in like the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Die.
Like a cash grab.
Yeah.
He'd be like
then,
an outcast. He's be a whole Nicolas Cage outcast situation.
Yeah, like he'd be in the beginning and then get kidnapped or something and then show up maybe 10, 15 minutes before the ending. No, you get Jeff Bridges all through this film.
Yeah, this is, yeah. If anything, a Jeff Bridges vehicle.
Jeff
Except
Bridges
for like
the
love
star.
Scenes.
And those should have been for Jeff Bridges.
I agree with you, but... except for those, you got him like mugging about the whole movie, man.
Yes, with his
mugging
with his
about
Volstagg, the voluminous beard, and his just general thick, weird accent that you can't quite understand.
This is a post-apocalyptic True Grit Jeff Bridges, where he seems to think that acting means just a real incomprehensible voice.
Do you think it's him, or do you think that's the directors now are like, no, do that True Grit thing?
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, he's
like, I was planning on talking like this the whole time.
I was going to enunciate all my lines ultra clearly. The witches are a powerful force.
A proper cup of coffee from a proper copper coffee pot.
I am a drunken witch finder. Let us go burn the witches.
You're getting into Queen Amidala territory.
I will not watch my people suffer.
You're getting into like Liam Neeson.
This is how democracy dies. Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
It sounds like a sign that was just repeating.
That was a bit on Jordan Jesse Go where Jordan was always talking about how when Liam Neeson played an American, he would over-enunciate.
Oh, well, that's... Like, you.
I have a very particular set of skills.
When you see, when you watch old Monty Python episodes, whenever they do an American voice, they do that too. Like, to an Englishman or whatever, is Liam Neeson's what, Irish, I guess? Mm-hmm. To people from the UK, Americans are people who over-enunciate the R's at the end of words. So when you, in Monty Python, they'd be like, well... Over here, I'm going to show you the thing because I'm from America. So it's like, is that what we sound like? Oh, yeah, horrible.
It's weird that they put an R in a word that doesn't even have it.
I mean, some people do. That's the.
Yeah.
Looks more like snow than snow. You know, tell me, what do you think about my idea? Maybe it stinks. You know, these are real lines from Monty Python sketches. So, Seventh Son. Smash cut to the movie we watched. It's set in a
legendary logo. moving on.
This is the pre-purchasing of Legendary Pictures by a Chinese media conglomerate.
Okay.
So this is a totally Western civilization film.
Yeah. Although I would say that it had a pretty nice variety of ethnicities represented in this movie. You got dragons, you got non-dragons.
I mean, right. All the non-white people were villains.
Not necessarily. What about that?
What about Tusk?
What about the
mammoth man?
What about? We'll get to Tusk in a second. What about the guy whose boat that they jump on and then gets capsized?
You're right. That
and then disappears
for a second. You assume drowned.
I assume he survived and is now thriving with his wife and I don't know 17 children. How many kids do people have in this universe?
At least seven. If you're the seventh son of a seventh son.
Yeah, and that's average, I guess.
Now, yeah, that was. He's like, did you only have seven children? Because that's very small in this time. So it's in some kind of made up. Bullshit fantasy medieval time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That could have used a map.
Stuart would have really liked a map. I was okay without a map.
At least put it on the back of the DVD box so I know what I'm getting into.
With a bunch of little triangles that say that they're mountains, man.
Yeah, if there's a marsh, I got to know what I'm going to have to pack before I get into this movie.
I don't think you know how movies work. Went to see that movie, The Martian. It was very expensive to build my own spacesuit.
Mm-hmm. And all the marshes.
Again.
It's about a guy who lives in a marsh. We lost Matt Damon in a marsh. Mm-hmm. He's in a bog somewhere.
Stuart, when he goes through. Yeah,
hanging out with my pal John Carter.
He's like, I'm going to go Martian this weekend. I don't even know if that's a thing. I've never heard anyone say
it's
that.
It's where you go out into a field with a couple of buckets filled with mosquito eggs.
Okay.
Okay. Wait, follow me.
Mosquito eggs.
What do you do with them?
Well, you got to wear a diaper.
That's number one.
I have more questions now.
And a big floppy hat. Everything else is totally optional.
Okay, I don't know what everything else was. You mean clothes, or do you mean like a beach ball?
Now, have you been bathing?
These activities.
Yeah, because if you've been bathing,
you don't have to do the salsa dancing. That's an option.
That's certainly optional.
Look, you can balance.
Otherwise, they force you to do with other couples, and you're like, this is weird.
This is not what I wanted or signed up for.
I'm wearing a floppy hat. I'm not good at this part. So if you've
We're
been bathing, you need
to
cut that out.
Where we move an orange from one of our necks to another person's neck, are we? I don't want to do that.
Or burst a balloon on somebody's lap.
Yeah. I don't like resort games is what it comes down to.
Why not?
I'm on vacation. Just let me do what I want to do.
And what you want to do is not inflate a balloon with your lover and awkwardly pop it in front of a crowd of other people that you've never...
Exactly. One thing I do is I call her my wife, not my lover. Because
that's
I'm not...
weird. You're on a fucking cruise for lovers.
Hey, come on, man.
Look, when we booked this trip to Temptation Island, Yeah. I assumed it was named after Saint Temptatius because it had been settled by the Portuguese in the 16th century. I didn't realize that it was an island for people to bring their mistresses and lovers. And
yeah, because it's like you and your wife and then a whole bunch of models.
Yeah, and Joan Severance.
And Joan Severance, of course. Too. And she's Billy there. Zane is the narrator, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't see how he couldn't be.
Joan Severance, the
David
Black
David Duchovny
Scorpion
is reading a letter about it. They got sent to
do
him.
Do you think Joan Severance was ever fired from someplace? And they were like, yeah, here's your severance package.
She's like, hilarious. Just give me the fucking money. Who's sending all those letters to David Duchovny, by the way?
The people who wrote them.
Yeah, but how do they get
us? Who sends us our letters? Oh, well, he in newspapers across the country, he just advertises in a little box, have sex? Send me a letter about it to David Duchovny, care of Red Shoe Factory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Care of guy who reads sex letters next to his dog.
I thought he was always like walking the streets in like a coat, like a rain, like a slicker.
Often. I mean, it was different than in, what was that show where it always opened with a woman?
Taxi Cab Confessions.
No.
Silk Stockings.
No, it was a
Hotline something.
No, it was one of these Cinemax shows where it always opened with a woman like
Cash Cab
taking a shower or sunbathing nude, and then she'd get a letter and read it, and then that was the story for the episode. And that, I always wondered why. So is she just some kind of like sex collector who like just is nude all the time and collects people's sex stories?
I like to think that are like sex chain letters where it's like I break the chain of this letter and
you will have
7 years bad luck.
A friend of mine's cousin broke this chain and had sex and then had to describe it in a letter.
Oh, so it's a punishment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dear Penthouse Forum, I never thought this would happen to me, but I had bad luck. Don't break this chain.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a letter about it.
Dear David Duchovny,
so seventh
House
son.
Of D, what was that all about? Love, Red Shoe Diaries.
Was that before or after Playing God?
It was after, I believe.
Because Playing God was the moment when I was like, ooh, this David Duchovny guy is not as great as I thought he was.
Playing God was his attempt at feature film stardom, yeah.
Dear David Duchovny, why are you spelling California with a K? Love me.
But then he changes
love
it
me
back.
Love me.
David Duchovny, why won't you love me? That's a song.
That's the song?
Yeah, there was a song that had those lyrics.
Okay.
Back in the height of David Duchovny mania. Remember when that swept the nation?
Yeah, Duchovny fever. Catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was coming down with a case of...
Who's saying it, like the Moody Blues or somebody?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Moody Blues. David Duchovny.
That's why they were so moody.
Yeah.
They're upset that David Duchovny
Silken and brass.
Yep.
Sunday nights on the X-Files.
Yep. Fox Mulder, A Night in White Satin.
Night in a Trench Coat with a big, heavy flashlight.
Yeah, we really have not talked about the movie at all.
Now, what if there's that opening in the X-Files where they walked in with huge flashlights in their hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What if they misplaced them and they had used fleshlights? I think it'd go a little something like this. These don't provide light.
Noises.
I can't see anything.
Wait, are you just pitching like Red Shoe Diaries?
This is from my... my pornographic sketch comedy show.
It's called the Triple X Files. It's super easy to do.
I'm pitching it to
it's your pornographic 90s sketch comedy show.
We only do porno parodies of 90s stuff. It's for FXXX, the new spinoff of FFXX. It's all porn, but it's mostly Simpsons reruns.
Mm-hmm. And wait, what would be your porn parody for Married with Children?
It would be called Married Having Sex with the Children.
Oh, no, that's terrible sound. Terrible.
Okay, well, what about a Frasier parody called Fucker?
It's called
it on Fox?
It's called Toss Salad.
I didn't say
and
it was all Fox.
Toss Salad.
I just said it was
90s. What would your Millennium parody be?
It would be called Millennibutt.
Okay, Lone Gunman?
Lone Gunman would be called Bone Gunman.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, on Millennium... it would still be Lance Henriksen.
What about Harsh Realm?
He'd be like, women find me irresistible. It's my gift and my curse. Harsh Realm would be called Harsh Sex.
Okay.
It is not for me. That is too rough for me. I don't like it. Yeah. But hey, look, I'm just the president of the network. I don't have to like everything.
Yeah, you don't have to like everything.
We're programming for a wide spectrum of viewers, you know.
Like, now, there's no judgments here.
Now, Viper, what would be the porn parody of that? That's the thing. Like a it's like a fancy car you have sex with.
That makes sense. Well, we have a lot of time
now,
in this podcast, so let's just explore all these different
space
things.
Space above
let's
and beyond.
Happen.
Yep.
So, Seventh Son. So it's a fantasy era, And there's a witch dragon woman played by Julianne Moore named Mother Malkin. One.
Instead of Sequest, it'll be Seabreast.
You know what? I think keep working on it. There's potential in the idea of a Sequest thing.
Yeah.
Because I can totally see a scene where someone has sex with a dolphin. But yeah. Let's keep working on the title.
I mean, Siemens right there. So if you could...
Oh,
you work with that.
Yeah,
somehow.
Semen Quest would be better, but it's instead of Sequest DSV, it's Semen Quest DP, I guess.
I guess it does keep the quest part is the important part, right? You want?
Yeah.
To...
Well, we're not going to be able to book Quest Love to be in it if we don't have Quest in the title.
That's true. So, Seventh Son.
Here's the thing. I'm just going to come out and say it. I have less to say about this movie than I normally would because I had a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So let's talk about what it was about.
Let's go through the synopsis really fast.
There's a witch dragon lady named Mother Malkin, played by Julianne Moore, and a witch hunter named a spook, in a term I did not feel comfortable with every time someone said it on screen.
It's a lot of white faces saying that.
And so there's a witch hunter. Let's just call him a witch hunter. There's a witch hunter who has imprisoned
He's not the last witch hunter.
He is the last witch hunter.
But that's IP protected.
I mean, he's the penultimate witch hunter.
Yeah.
He imprisoned her, but the rise of the next blood moon, which happens one every 100 years.
Moon blood good.
The rise of that moon blood is money on
the floor. Why didn't they put moon blood good in this movie?
I don't know. Yeah.
They're always talking about blood moons.
Yeah. Now,
the world's only werewolf actress. Moon blood good.
Yeah. Werewactress.
Keep workshopping that.
You know what? You keep working on Seabreast.
I got this whiteboard over here. I'm just writing down words.
So this witch hunter has imprisoned her. She escapes. The witch hunter is played by Jeff Bridges. It's played by Jeffrey Bridges, who you may remember from The Last Picture Show.
Sure.
And maybe Fat City. And what has he done since then? Not that much.
No,
but
that's
he's
right.
kind of playing Rooster Cogburn / Big Dude Lebowski as a witch hunter. He's always drinking. He's a great fighter, but he's like
everything he says is kind of like this, but it's more British.
And it's a little more Baney.
Yep.
We'll have to fight a dragon, Batman. Mr. Wayne, the Blood Moon.
So he's hard to understand at times, but he's got so much charisma.
Yeah.
And he is, aside from his accent being thick, he is putting a lot of energy into this. Like
he seems to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, he is not walking through this role.
If you were a guy, and you are a guy.
Okay, sure. Okay. You got me. Imagine I'm with you on this one.
Okay.
Hold on. Okay, there, I got
imagine
it.
Imagine you're a guy.
Okay, I bought a ticket for this ride. I want to see the rest of it.
I did a several-minute bit where I was talking about porn parodies of 90s shows, so I'm pretty sure I'm a guy.
You've lived a full life.
Nope, just a young man.
but you've never gotten to wield a sword and fight witches. Once you get that chance... You were going to put your whole heart and soul into that.
Who knew it? But like...
if you're going to like be like a dragon fighter, you're going to be like, fuck yeah, I'm just going to put on a crazy voice and I'm going to put my whole heart into this thing.
There's a scene in it where Jeff Bridges is with his apprentice and they've just beaten up a witch. He's really a warlock. A warlock who can turn into a mean demon bear.
Mm-hmm.
Copyright Marvel Comics, I guess, the demon bear. And he's like, we have to light him on fire and burn him alive to kill him. And the guy's like, I can't do it. I'm not like you. And Jeff Bridges goes, not yet. And then lights the witch on fire and turns around and goes, but you will be. And
there's this cackle at that point. You might as well just be like, ha, 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 ha.
There's this look in his eyes of just such total happiness. Like, I can't believe I get to say this shit. And I swear there was one part where he's talking about witches and then he just walking away and goes, fucking witches. he's totally into this part. And Julianne Moore is more interested than I would think she would
there's
be.
There's that great scene where she offers Alicia Vikander a blood cake
and it's got a bunch of worms crawling
in it. Oh man,
that's
hilarious. And then she delivers a monologue about the blood moon and all
yeah who knows
stuff.
That stuff's not so interesting, but he and his apprentice Kit Harington, who you may know as Jon Snow from the hit TV show Game of Bones on
or,
my channel
yeah. What was he in that Pompeii movie we watched?
It's called Pompeii.
He was Pompeii.
It's called Pompeii Iron.
It was called Pompey, and it was about John Wayne's sidekick from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, played by Woody Strode, right? That was Woody Strode in that role, wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, they track down Mother Malkin, the evil witch dragon, but, uh-oh, she manages to kill Kit Harington. thus depriving
Ken Harrington, Girl Detective, is dead.
Depriving Jeff Bridges of his apprentice. And so he goes to find a seventh son of a seventh son. Now, I was always under the understanding that in Legends, the seventh son of a seventh son was a wizard. But here the implication is that the seventh of a seventh is kind of super strong and super tough and has some kind of magical destiny.
He's just a real cool dude.
Just a super cool dude. Just a great guy.
A real Destiny's Child.
A real...
Yeah, a real Lisa Left Eye Lopez.
A real TLC.
I don't
a real En Vogue. In that you're never going to get it. 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 What are you never going to get, Dan?
Salt or pepper?
The correct answer was my lovin'.
Oh, okay.
Now, he goes to this farm.
Wait, hold. I'm never going to get your lovin'?
No, you'll get it.
Oh.
Yeah, but you got to work harder for it.
Okay.
Free your mind and the rest will follow, Dan.
Man, you know a lot of En Vogue songs.
I know two En Vogue songs.
Don't be so shallow.
I know exactly the same number of En Vogue songs as the number of Blues Traveler songs I know.
Okay.
Which is that one about Don't Give Me the Runaround and the one about The Hook Brings You Back.
No, those are different songs. For a second, I thought that might be the same song, but that's just because Blues Traveler songs sound the same.
Did the Blues Traveler sing those songs when he traveled into the movie
King Blues Traveler.
Legend tells of a blues traveler
who rides the rails.
And you can still hear him saying, I'm blue, da-boo-dee, da-boo-die, da-boo-dee, da-boo-die, da-boo-dee, ba-doo-die.
I summoned him.
The weird thing about summoning the I'm blue guy is you don't even have to say it.
Yep.
It just appears. He's like Mr. Mix-a-Piddle-ick that way. Anyway. Back to Seventh Son. He goes to a farm where Olivia Williams is the mom, and she has a son who's the seventh son of a seventh son who is busy tending the pigs, but he has dreams. Luke Skywalker on Tatooine-style dreams of something bigger. And
dreams of getting some power converters.
Jeff Bridges comes by.
Already they've kind of established a little more color in this movie than most of the like grim fantasy adventures we've watched.
The grim fandangos we're used to.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Was that all in black and white? Or just
Sam and Max just hit the roads?
Yep, the full throttle. The Maniac's Mansion. There was already like, it felt like people
Day
were
of the
just.
Tentacle.
There you go.
It felt like people were just putting more effort into this than they really needed to, because it's a pretty generic fantasy movie, but like the performers are a little bit better. There's just like that much more of a type feeling of energy and like design.
I'd say for the most part,
it's not all
desaturated.
Yeah.
At least they're interesting to look at.
Yeah. And there's literally, like you're saying, there's literally color on screen. Like people wear the colors blue and red and yellow in their clothes. It's not just all dark greens and dark browns and like mush.
The editing is not hyperkinetic. You can see what's happening most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a basic level of filmmaking skill, let's say, on display in this movie.
Now, so Jeff Bridges picks up this kid, who's not really a kid, he's like 20 or something, and makes him his new apprentice, and they just kind of go around trying to track down Julianne Moore.
Meanwhile, she's like rallying her troops.
And the kid's mom gave him like a magic amulet to bring with
him. That's going to be important, probably.
And yeah, Julianne Moore's rallying her troops, and she's got a pretty good armory of crazy henchmen. There's the God of Swords, who's kind of like a...
Best dude.
Who's like a like Hindu deity type looking guy. Or he's got in that he's got four arms and he's blue. Abu Dibu, Dabu Dai. Dabu Di, Dabu Dai. And there's a cheetah woman. There's a snake man. Or he's more of a gecko man, as you made clear.
Yeah.
And there's Jimon Honshu, who either turns into a dragon or his horse turns into a dragon. This is not
it's
super
kind of a
clear.
Mix, yeah.
And everybody has bone chains that they can throw out like Scorpion in Mortal Kombat or the bad guy at the end of Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yeah.
Everybody has these like throwing chains with blades at the end of them. And there's just a bunch of adventures. She's trying to cause trouble before the Blood Moon while he's trying to they're trying to stop her, and they encounter a couple different types of monsters. Yeah.
Fight a bear guy.
They fight a bear man. They fight a big like kind of a thing that looks a little bit like the Cyclops from Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. He starts falling in love with a
like
witch.
Like a Boggins or something?
Yeah, Baggins.
Like a Boogans.
Boogans. It was a booger.
From Revenge of the Nerds?
Sure.
Okay.
And
that would be great.
The Apprentice.
Honestly, if they were fighting Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. that this would be a 5-star movie.
Oh, it would be amazing. Yeah. Because he elevates everything that he's in.
He really does.
They have. Meanwhile, the Julianne Moore's sister has a daughter who's a witch. She's played by Ex Machina,
mm-hmm.
and she starts falling in love with the hero because, as she tells him after it happens,
or is she just trying to trick him so that he'll free her and she'll leave him down in that like fancy mansion to like starve to death, I'm assuming.
We,
and then she'll go
know.
Off and live amongst humans.
Maniac mansion.
So anyway, we're forgetting the best character in the whole movie, a little guy, and by that I mean a big guy,
mm-hmm.
named Tusk. Now, Tusk
he's
is,
as loyal as he is ugly.
He's best described as a leftover latex mask from some other movie that has been applied to a tall actor so that he looks a little bit like if Robert Davi had just like weird giant vampire tusks.
Yeah, or if like Tom Waits, after morphing into Ron Perlman, just kept on morphing.
just kept morphing, huh?
Yeah.
Dan, what's your joke analogy for what he looks like?
He's like a goblin mixed with a toothpaste tube.
That doesn't really doesn't really help me.
That makes sense.
But there's a couple times when Jeff Bridges is like, "Oh, he's as loyal as he is ugly," and it gets to a point where it feels like he's looks shaming him.
Yep. Notorious Hollywood hunk Jeff Bridges.
It feels like
for a long time.
Tuskly.
He's got that amazing beard.
He's a very handsome man. He's just older now.
Tusk-like.
Go see any movie he made from the 70s through like the year
2000.
Yeah,
Crazy Heart.
Yeah, no, he's a
I'm crazy
handsome.
For him.
What are you talking?
No, he's a very handsome man.
It does feel like maybe like Tusk like stole a lady from him at some point. And now he just feels like he just needs to rub in, like, at any point. He's like, no, but you're ugly.
But you're ugly, stupid. I know you're my most loyal friend, but you're ugly. Now,
and Tusk is like, well, I may be ugly, but, you know, sometimes a girl likes a strong, silent type.
Yeah, not always talking in an incomprehensible accent.
And a good eater, I'm assuming.
Sexy ugly. You know what I'm saying. You know, I got, like, this quiet confidence.
Yeah, and we've indicated that he can at least pee a large volume of water onto a fire.
Right,
yeah.
Which is what women love.
Yeah. You know what they say
women
about
are like,
that's what they talk about in the locker room.
Women are like, that don't impress me much. Can you
was that
put out a fire with
that?
Your...
That don't impress me much.
Hey.
Leonardo's wife, should I?
Well, why don't you put out a fire with your impressive urine stream, huh?
So you and Brad Pitt, that don't impress me much. No, that's not the song we're singing. There's a lot of adventures. We can go through all of them in detail, but we're not going to. They fight some dragons. They fight a big monster. They fight another monster.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Jeff Bridges takes his apprentice to his like secret steampunk hideout cave where he has swords and things. And here's the thing I liked about the movie. Aside from the throwing chains, which the bad guys use, so I'll just say they're magic. The hero does not have a bunch of like steampunk inventions. There's just swords and axes.
Yeah, he's got like a magic staff,
and he's got like powders that have magical properties.
And the training montage had like a bunch of good jokes in it. I just remember that they existed. I can't really remember
A bunch of good jokes in it, and there's one particularly good joke later on where he's always got this magic flask.
Yeah,
and I assume it's magic because it's never.
Well,
empty.
I mean, that was the one joke I remember. I mean, like your joke is later on, but like the one joke I do remember from the montage is where it's like he has the flask and he's like, this is a magic potion. He's like, what does it give you? He's like, courage. But it's just like alcohol.
Yeah.
But then later,
does this kill? Cowardice.
Yeah, exactly.
But later on, he gives him a taste from the flask and he takes a sip, the younger guy. And the younger guy's about to take another sip and Jeff Bridges goes, no, you must only take one sip a day. He goes, why is that? Because it's mine. It's like, that's a solid joke.
Yeah.
And delivered very well. Eventually they all catch up with each other at there's a town that the witches go to for whatever. I don't remember why they went to that town because another witch was burned there
witch
or something.
Convention.
Yeah, it's where they burned
Mr. Bear.
Yeah.
And where Paddington the witch.
That's the noise the bear makes.
It's just the song the bear sings. Oh, that's a flashback. That's an old Flophouse episode. That's just the song.
Flophouse.
The song the
flashback,
bear plays.
Back.
Go find it. I'm not going to tell you what episode it's from because I don't remember.
One missed call.
Oh, it was one missed call? Yeah. Spoiler alert. They go.
Spoiler alert. That's the song the bear makes.
So the witches all are mad, and they're like, we're going to make an example of these jerks. So they go in force and like blow stuff up, and they all transform and use all their powers. And this is actually a kind of fun little scene because there's a fair amount of motion to the sequence. It's not like the fucking Avengers montage at the end of the first Avengers movie, but it's still pretty good.
There's
a dragon monster bursting through walls.
Most of the action sequences in this movie I enjoyed. The last one at the end is a little sloppy. It does fall under the problem that a lot of movies have where it's like, these are the toughest, roughest bad guys in the world. Oh, wow, we're running out of time. Let's just kill these guys quick, okay? Two hits and you're done. God of Swords, you're going to get lit on fire pretty quick. Snake Man, you died already a long time ago. I guess you'll get stabbed in the gut and you're dead now.
And most of the time, the bad guy just like totally underestimates the other person and then they get stabbed and they die.
Yeah.
It's not like they're like fighting. They're just like standing there for a second that they're dead.
And there's no brilliant stratagem that the hero – it's not like I discovered the one weakness and now I'll exploit
it's
it.
Being set on fire. They don't like that.
It turns out these witches' weaknesses is everything that would kill a person. Yep. Sapphire, stabbing, I assume a gunshot wound, maybe just a heart attack.
My only weakness is my own mortality.
Yeah. Like, it's a step away from one of the bad guys just clutching his chest and dropping dead of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Or like, if the God of Swords was swinging his swords at you and then had a brain aneurysm and died. Like,
it's, sometimes happens.
It's not quite as sloppy as that, but it's a little bit. But anyway, Olivia Williams, it turns out, she gave the amulet she gave to her son is a special secret blood rock stone thing that gives Mother Malkin extra superpower badness.
She wants that thing.
Yeah, and so Olivia
she's
Williams...
She's got to have it, in the words of the movie. She's got to have it.
Yeah,
that's what they were
talking
about.
She's got to have that MacGuffin.
It was weird when I was watching She's Got to Have It, and I was like, this is a really good just kind of look at a couple people's lives. Well, now they're fighting over a magic amulet. It's weird. I thought what she had to have was love and sex, but I guess it was that magic amulet.
Yeah.
And if she finds that amulet, will it become She's All That?
Oh. I was just an amulet to you?
Yep.
A stupid amulet?
Mm-hmm. Freddie Prinze Jr.
Truly a prince among men.
Yep.
Take that, Wing Commander.
Take that, guy who wanted to play Spider-Man but didn't get the part.
Mm-hmm. Take that, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Are they married?
They at least were. I don't know if that's still happening.
Hmm. Right into, are they married? Care of Dan McCoy. Yeah. 123 Freddie, Flop Street.
Freddie Prinze Jr., write in and tell me whether you're still married to Sarah Michelle Gellar.
SMG, you can write in too. Tell us if you're still married to the Prinze.
She's probably pretty busy though.
With what?
What? Is she Clarissa?
That's right.
She Sabrina?
Even Clarissa isn't Clarissa anymore. Or Sabrina.
In the movie Sabrina.
I'm surprised that Clarissa isn't Clarissa anymore because she had to explain it all. Like, she had to explain all of it. And, like, she can't be done. By now,
no, she explained it all.
I mean, that would take infinity amount of time.
Merely a drop of water in an ocean of knowledge.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about a drop of water. The entire ocean is in that drop.
It's like the Sisyphean whale is small bites.
I
need the whole thing in patience.
Small bites?
Grains of sand is what I'm saying, Elliot.
I hate sand. It's so rough. It gets everywhere.
It gets in your butt.
Not like Natalie Portman's skin.
Where does her skin get?
It just gets on her.
Oh, okay.
Look, I don't remember what Hayden Panettiere. I don't remember what Anakin said in that movie, okay? All I remember is that he was touching her back.
Hayden Panettiere was played a Hayden Christensen in the
played
prequels.
The Hayden Christensen.
She'd actually be pretty good, I think.
That's the Hayden Christensen.
If she played the Hayden Christensen in Shattered Glass, yeah. Amazing.
I love it all.
She's in a movie called Shattered Hayden, which is about the making of shattered glass.
Guys, sure. A real hero is tapped to play Hayden Christensen.
All right, this is your job, Flophouse fans. It's called,
this is your job? Are you paying?
It's called...
Yeah. What are the benefits?
It's called Hayden Switch 2016. Switch out Hayden Christensen for Hayden Panettiere.
In both of their projects.
Yeah, in any project.
Then show it. Then show it to your grandparent, who's going to be like, "I don't know who these people are."
But I appreciate the attention.
But thank you for visiting me.
Yeah.
So there's a big fight over this amulet. The daughter, who the hero is falling in love with, runs off with it after he saved her life from the witch hunter.
Yeah.
There's a big fight at the ruins at the Legends of the Hidden Temple that Julianne Moore lives in. They fight. They fight.
A bunch of witches turn into like flaming paper.
They turn into flaming paper when they die, mm-hmm. and the good guys win in the end. And it turns out that Jeff Bridges had once loved Mother Malkin. They were in love together, and it was only because she loved him that he was able to trick her into being mm-hmm. imprisoned so many years before. And he's about to stab her, but then she fights him, and then the apprentice just kind of throws a knife right into her gut and then burns her up.
It's a callback.
Goodbye, Michelle Malkin.
That's why he was training him to throw knives so well, so that he would show up at the end and throw that knife.
It is the only training he gets. He gets magic powder education and knife throwing, and that's about it. Oh, and he sword fights with some kind of possessed suit of armor.
Poorly.
Yes.
Yeah, and then
you have fought in poorly.
You fought in?
Yeah, I was supposed to say you had chosen poorly, but I made it fought in instead.
Like
Charles Fawton, the actor and director of Night of the Fighter.
He made that one movie.
Yeah.
Man, he should have made more movies.
And in the end, we have our hero, whose name I don't remember.
Yeah. Let's just call him Seventh Son.
Seventh Son.
He kisses Alicia Vikander.
Who then turns into the wind.
Yeah, she witches away.
Like women do.
Yep.
Just like a woman.
And for a second you think that he's going to go riding off into adventure, but nope.
Nope. He gets a tattoo on his hand. That means he's a witch hunter.
You mean
now.
A brand from a hot piece of metal.
Yeah, whatever. He gets branded. And now that witch cave is his. And he gets to stay there with Tusk because Tusk, I guess, owed Jeff Bridges a life debt and is now going to be passed on to ever. And Jeff Bridges rides off to, I guess, seek his fortune.
Yeah.
and the bell tolls, and that's what tells them that there's a witch to be about. And he puts his hoodie up and is on his way. The apprentice, that is.
Yeah.
Because he wears, much like it irritated Stewart that Eddie Murphy and the Golden Child wore like a white hoodie with the hood half cut off. Mm-hmm. It bothered me that the apprentice in this is basically just wearing a white Champion brand hoodie through the entire movie. It really threw me off. And at the only.
Well, it's a classic white hat trope, Elliot.
Well, if it was a white hoodie.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like a cloak.
Yeah, I mean, he looked kind of
He even
like,
had a drawstring for the hood.
If he went to a comic book convention and he was like, yeah, this is my costume, I'm the guy from Assassin's Creed, people would be like, you look terrible. Fourth place.
Fourth place is pretty good.
Yeah, it's a small comic book convention.
I mean, it's just outside of placing.
What?
It's just outside of placing, though. Like, it's kind of insulting, just to be like...
Just outside. Yeah, I mean, they're giving it to him because he's, like, got magic powers.
Fourth place, you still win a $15 gift certificate. Like,
yeah,
come on.
Sam Goody.
Which closed years ago. Now you can only go to Sam Batty.
Oh.
Now, let me say this. My description was pretty lackluster.
No, it's fine.
But I feel like it's because when
no, LA, you did a great job.
For some reason,
super.
When it's a bad movie, the details are burned into my brain, and I want to discuss them. But I genuinely really had fun watching this movie.
Yeah, I mean, we're skipping to Final Judgment. Let's just do it now.
It's by no means a great movie or even a particularly good movie, but I would like enjoyed it so much that I kind of didn't remember it that well afterwards.
Yeah, I'm...
Which is why this is the worst Flophouse episode.
We
can still save it.
Okay.
No, in the Flophouse categories of good, bad movie, bad, bad movie, movie kind of liked. I got to say, I definitely kind of like this movie.
Yeah, me too.
I think that our nominal hero for this movie, Blandy Blanderson, like, you can kind of fast forward through all of his
scenes.
What's
his name? Like Todd or something? What's the character's name?
The character's name is Tom.
Anytime that he's...
So close. I'll give you 55% credit.
Can I redeem that at Sam Goody?
Yes. You can get one-third of a Mobile Fidelity gold disc. It sounds better because it's gold. Okay. So pay me $100 for this CD.
Anytime that guy's on screen without Jeff Bridges, you can pretty much ignore
just skip it.
Ignore the movie. Luckily... Jeff Bridges in a like most of the film. So
I mean, this is a movie that, by all rights, Jeff Bridges should have been in three scenes and Julianne Moore should have been in two scenes. And yet they have really consistent presences throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And are really fun to watch. And Julianne Moore gets to wear some really crazy costumes. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges gets
like a claw glove that she scrapes people up with.
If Jeff Bridges had brought this level to RIPD,
yeah,
that could have elevated that movie. Like, it shows you how much he makes a movie.
Yeah, it really but he has the same kind of mumbly performance, but yeah, he's just so much more fun. And I don't know if it's because the supporting cast seems a little better than RIPD, like Alicia Vikander seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I felt like with RIPD, they were really convinced that that was like an amazing premise.
Yeah.
And they were like, people are going to love this premise.
People love Men in Black, and that's way crazier than this.
What if instead of aliens, it was ghosts? Like, this is, I feel like they know the premise is not that original.
Yeah.
It's just a guy trying to hunt down a big bad magic monster.
Yep.
And so, I don't know, it felt like they put a little bit more effort into just like, what would be a fun thing for them to do here? Or like, if here's a monster that has bad eyesight, let's have it like just barging through things and slamming into mountains and stuff.
Yeah, and
like
the effects for that one were pretty cool. I wish they did less with the like, Julianne Moore tail attack that she used on everybody.
Yeah, they got, I got kind of bored of that,
which
attack
was a little crappy. And all the morphing effects were, I guess, all right. But
there was one character who turns into a white dragon, and that effect never looked very good.
Yeah, and I feel like with that sort of shit, like, less is more, dude. Just do, like, it's probably cheaper to do less of it.
There's a part at the end where Jimon Hanshu's character is a dragon. He's fighting Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges goes, "You fight me as a dragon? Have you no honor?" And Jimon Hanshu turns into a person again. And it's almost like he's like, "We're running out of money for the effects budget. Yeah. Just be a man for the rest of this.
We got a black dragon and a white dragon circling each other like a really cool yin yang up there.
We can't afford a third dragon."
That, wow, is that yin yang and what else? I don't know what
we only have money for a double dragon for this final fight for the NES.
Hello, Internet. I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
She is my wife.
And he's my husband.
And it is our pleasure to introduce to you a brand new podcast,
Schmanners. It's extraordinary etiquette
for ordinary occasions. Teresa, let me ask you this. Can you teach me how to write a thank you note?
Yes, I can.
How about tips to improve my table manners?
I'll do my best.
And will you finally explain to me the difference between casual and business casual and cocktail and formal and black tie and all that stuff?
If anybody can, I can.
But like, it's going to be funny, right?
Of course, I'm going to give historical origins and how those manners fit into our everyday lives. How could it not be funny?
But also sometimes we'll talk about like burps and farts, right?
Yeah, when not to.
But we'll still talk about it.
Yes.
Great. So come join us for our new hilarious show.
No RSVP required.
Coming to you soon every Friday on MaximumFun.org. It's Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Just a note from our sponsor for the show this week.
Yes.
The Flophouse is supported by Squarespace.
You bet it is. Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
Squarespace is the simplest way to create a compelling website. From the strange to the downright bizarre, great stories define us. You should tell yours. With simple tools and templates, Squarespace helps you capture your story with a captivating website. You can start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/flop. You should. Squarespace.
Now, here's the thing. You said bizarre stories, right? Because I have an idea for a website, and I wanted to run it by you guys. I thought maybe Squarespace could help.
Okay.
It's called www.sewerbath.com.
Okay.
And here's something that I've never mentioned to you guys, but it might explain.
That sounds great.
The smell. I have a fear of clean water. And so when I bathe, I go into the sewers, much like a Ninja Turtle or a Chud or,
I get the picture.
Or like in Orson Welles in The Third Man or a Dark Man.
Yep, that's what he's doing down there. He's bathing.
Harry
Lime.
Phantomas, one of those types. So I take a lot of baths in sewage, and as a result, I see a lot of interesting things.
As a result, I have hepatitis C.
I mean, that's another thing. Do you guys know a cure for cholera? But so I wanted to start this website called www.sewerbath.com. It's just pictures of things.
www.roberdavi.com.
Abu Dhabi.sewerbath.com, because I'm sitting normal there. And so do you think Squarespace would be able to help me? Because I got to put up a lot of pictures. And also, I like to write stories about the objects I find in the sewer.
Okay.
So do you think I could put text?
So there's a whole section. I'm assuming you can put text in this website that you're...
I hope so, because here's the thing. I don't know anything about coding.
I do have a slick coding
of grease from my sewer baths, but I don't know about anything about computer coding. But you think Squarespace could even help me, a guy who doesn't
know...
Could Squarespace help me, a guy who doesn't know anything about websites?
I'm pretty sure, Dan, you want to check the notes?
Squarespace helps you capture a story with a captivating website, says the notes.
So what website should I go to?
You should go to squarespace.com/flop.
How do you spell flop?
F-L-O-P.
How do you spell square? You have it written in front of you, dude.
S-Q-U-A-R-E.
Here's the bit I was going to do. I was going to ask you to spell square and then space. And after you aced those, I was going to ask you to spell a really complicated word. But I'm just going to skip that bit since you stumbled over the word square.
I'm distracted by the next bit, which is... in my hand.
Oh, we got to prepare. Oof, took the wind out of my sails on that one, Dan.
Well, Squarespace.com.
Okay. Well, thanks, Squarespace.
Build it, Squarespace.
yeah, no, there's a... We've received a lot of gifts from listeners, and I wanted to thank people.
The Flophouse mailbag is bursting at the seams.
Yeah, the physical mailbag is bursting in a way that it hasn't ever... First, I want to read this letter from Nathan, last name withheld. Dear Floppiests, hey guys, I'm a huge fan of the Flophouse, and I just wanted to give you guys this gift. I worked at a used record shop in Detroit and amazingly ran across this 45 RPM single of Robbie Buchanan performing The Chosen One from the soundtrack of The Golden Child.
Whoa.
Now, he says that Elliot should have this because he specifically mentioned liking the music, but anyone who has a turntable could take it.
Alas, I do not have one.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one with a record player, right?
Yeah, that checks out.
I'll allow it. He says, there's nothing in the rule book that says you can't own a record player.
In any event, consider it a token of my appreciation for what you guys do. It's kept me laughing since the classic Oogie Loves episode. So I appreciate.
Now there was a movie worth flopping.
Yeah.
So this is a single of Robbie Buchanan, The Chosen One.
Are you gonna put it on air
from the Golden Child soundtrack? No, I don't think I'm gonna put it on air. Although, this does remind me that John Biegun. I assume John Biegun did a version of Elliot's. That's How It Works song that will be put on this episode.
Please do, because that was a masterpiece, what he put together there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like he really made, he both made me sound better than I actually do, and by putting music behind it, showed me how totally off-key I am all the time.
So stay tuned after the episode to listen to the single version of That's How It Works.
That's not the album cut.
Assuredly, the song of the winter.
The album version has a lot more production elements on it. The song of the winter.
It's shorter. It's meant for radio.
Song of the winter, definitely. But thank you to Nathan for The Chosen One from the soundtrack to The Golden Child. But moving on.
That's great.
Also, in the physical mailbox this week. What?
I'm doing my best not to make fun of your mispronunciations.
Michelle, last name withheld, sent out these zines that she made.
Whoa, we love zines.
Peaches Beat, the magazine for Purpozoids and Purposettes. It's a tiger beat for fans of the Flophouse.
Oh, wow.
With a lot of great photos of us sent to ourselves.
Just what teens like.
Quotes, quizzes.
Nope. Here's at least one picture that compares your beard to Riker's beard, Dan. Yeah,
it is a very Rikerish beard.
So thank you, Michelle, for that.
Thank you very much.
Oh, this is lovely.
You guys vamp for a second while I go
vamping it
blah,
up.
Blah, blah. I want to suck your blood.
Yep.
But I barely know you. Let's talk.
Oh, yeah, let's.
Batman. Well, in our little town of Anatemka.
I live in Gotham. I'm a billionaire, I suppose.
Ah, fascinating. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm a vampire.
Sure. How's your relationship with your parents? Mine is
not great.
Weird too.
Do you mean my real parents or my vampire father who turned me into a creature of the night? My relationship to both is not good.
So, biological. I don't quite understand. Right.
They're both biology related. and what do you do in your spare time?
Do
you have hobbies?
It's kind of like parkour.
Interesting.
But it's gadget-based.
I do a lot of jumping off of buildings and landing in a three-point style with my legs and one arm down on the ground. It's weird. I distinctly remember making my ad an M4W like ad, and yet you responded.
You're getting closer to a Werner Herzog.
You know, my film, Fitzcarraldo, I'm a vampire, by the way, Werner Herzog. There's something I should tell you about myself. I'm not actually a vampire.
You really don't need a vamp anymore. We're moving on.
Oh, thank goodness.
Okay, back to the Flophouse housework.
So from it's hard to read his signature, but I'm going to say from D. Gary. That's what I'm going to go with. We'll have
to get our Flophouse handwriting expert in here.
Yeah, which is Dan, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
He donated a little to the Flophouse, and also he sent us DVDs of The Stuff.
Oh, that's a fun
that's
movie.
Cool.
Gymkata.
That's a great,
that's an amazing movie.
Yeah. And some Ziggy Valentine's.
Oh, wow. But Ziggy doesn't know love. He's lonely.
So we'll split. We'll
have to crack that box open and find out the contents.
We'll argue over who gets what after the show.
Yeah, because we're going to be fighting over those Ziggy Valentine's.
Yeah.
But lastly.
because I have to go back to second grade tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. Thanks for sending them. They're great.
Sorry. Dan, what are you breaking?
That was some radio effects where Dan dropped.
Dan is literally sitting next to a pile of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Lastly, great thanks to Ashley Shannon, who sent in a bunch of...
No, not going
to
withhold that last name, huh?
Yeah, sorry. She sent in a bunch of...
No, she's just in the Witness Protection Program, but that's okay.
A bunch of late Cagemas gifts. And she said, it would be great if you could open them on air. And I said, hey, why not? So I have no idea what these things
are. What if
they're
really offensive?
It's possible.
Yep.
But
we can't edit this out.
No, we're going
this
out live right
this
now.
This is happening live. This is like undateable.
These are giant packages, honestly. These are large packages. I had to take a cab home from work.
Well,
stop bragging about your package size.
Flophouse hosts are known for their large packages.
So I'm going to...
Wow, that is a lot of stuff.
...distribute these out here, and we can...
Are they to anyone in particular?
I guess we'll open them.
There's no indication of who gets what, so we can just open these.
Okay, you're listening to the sound of us opening things.
These are late Cagemas gifts.
Riveting audio.
So Cagemas is the annual holiday every December where we watch Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah, comes right after Sadler-vember. Sadler-vember. Well, no, Sadler, where we watch William Sadler movies.
Oh, that would be great.
Oh, this one's to Stuart, it says.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
This one
so
is,
trade it up.
To Dan, should I just keep it?
I think so, yeah.
And this one also says to Dan.
So. Okay, so I guess nothing for me. That's fine.
Okay,
my life is full of blessings. I need for nothing.
This one over here, I assume, is then for you.
Oh, okay, thanks.
The largest one.
Yeah,
so.
For the smallest guy.
All right, so we can all open.
We're going to keep opening.
Keep opening.
On air.
Stay with us, audience. Stay with us. Dan, you could at least take
the
plastic wrap off.
Presents being open.
The only way there could be more layers is if you had put these in the trunk of a car. You're opening the car. Maybe the car had been wrapped in the like greased saran wrap.
Oh,
Yeah, this is to Ellen.
Mine is totally unwrapped, so I'll describe it. I am looking at a lovely...
Totally Unwrapped sounds like the name of a reality show about a wrapping paper company.
That is run by hip-hop artists.
On Bravo.
So this is a lovely, it looks like a print of a map of Tolkien's Middle Earth that has been lovingly framed in some nice greens and golds. That's perfect for the elven theme in my living room.
Yeah, you do call your living room Livendale.
Mm-hmm. Yep, where we only speak Quenya and Sindarin, depending on the time of year.
Whoa, this is also framed over here. It's huge. And this is, it looks like one of the posters for The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, my favorite movie of all time, the original version.
Not the remake. Okay.
And also in a lovely frame.
And I I've got this smaller frame, which is a... This looks to have been taken from, I think, maybe an Instagram I did or something where I turned a plastic knife into a shark.
All right.
And I'm showing it to Elliot right now.
Oh, that's adorable. You really don't have a lot to do at work, huh?
Well, and... But sort of the larger gift here is a...
I hope it's a framed picture of me and Elliot.
No, it's a framed cover of the Flash Gordon.
Oh, that's great. The old
is. Nice.
It's very
Is it the Doc Shaner cover or is it the...
It's definitely the Doc Shaner cover. Oh, awesome. The superior cover.
Whoa.
I don't want to...
Whoa, burn some bridges, why don't you? Just light Jeff Bridges on fire like almost happens in Seventh Son.
Look, I'm not saying something against the artist who did the other cover. I'm just, the other cover was a little too cutesy for me as well.
No, okay.
This is a delight.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. We don't deserve any of this stuff.
No, it's wonderful.
Though we're not going to open it on air, I'd also like to thank Lewis Michael Powell, who sent along a grab bag of stuff. A collection of DVDs, Buffy the Vampire Slayer collectible card games, a baseball mitt that I'm assuming is for David last name withheld, Elliot's brother, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for when he gets back to the majors.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that, Lewis. I'm sure you'll see pictures of all this stuff on the internet soon.
That's a lot of gift stuff.
This was a lot of stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Just so you know, we don't do it for the gifts. We do it for the laughs. But cha-ching.
Don't tell that to Squarespace.
and Squarespace. We do it to Squarespace.
Surprisingly enough, though,
Do you have more things we can unwrap on air?
No. Surprisingly enough, that was not our official letter section.
What? I'm glad I didn't sing a song.
This is our official letter section.
What that taught me is that if you have special instructions for your thing, just tell Dan to do it that way because he'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like, now for this gift...
I want you to read this letter backwards.
When you open this, take off all your clothes at your workplace of work. All right, I have to do it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Law of letters.
Letter law has spoken.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, this is the first letter, and it's a bit of a serious letter. I mean, it's actually quite a serious letter, so I'm just warning people now. But it goes like this. Dear Floppers, unfortunately, I write in dire circumstances. My older adopted brother recently decided to end his life. He was a 28-year-old history secondary high school teacher, and my last experience with him was listening to United Passions together and him moaning about his beloved Liverpool. As he made me a fan of the show, and toward the end it was one of the few things that made me happy. He was always too scared to write in himself, but I hope that the Flophouse listeners give their love to Thomas's late family, the Bradleys, and use this as another reason to speak about mental health. So obviously that is very, very sad news about... Thomas, and we appreciate that we were at least some solace to this man, as he was clearly going through a lot of pain in his life. We are a comedy show, so it's difficult to say anything about this in a larger sense, but I don't know. I know that I've gone through a lot of issues with depression. I know that I think both of you have had your problems in the past. I urge anyone who's having trouble to seek help rather than to give in to despair. And that's about all I can say about it.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that having been doing the show for a number of years, I've interacted, like, it's allowed me to interact with a lot of people, and it's kind of shown me that there's a lot of great people out there and a lot of people that you can connect with, whether it's through the internet or whatever, whether it's through just listening to other, like, listening to podcasts and finding some kind of human connection. And that's at least helped me.
Excuse me. The you can never know what's going on inside of another person's head, and so I'm always wary to pretend that I've reached places that other people might have reached or not. I don't, it's hard for me to know how my experiences would compare to somebody else's. But I was writing something recently that was on a similar theme to this, about kind of seeing where my life could have gone or might have gone if the wrong things had happened, and how the only solution to that for me was other people. It was just like opening myself to other people. And that's a tough thing for everyone to do, and it wasn't an easy thing for me to do. And so I don't want to be like, this is all you have to do, just this thing. But the other thing is, for people here, if there's someone who you know is having a hard time, then reach out to them. I don't want to make this further sadder, but there's one person that I won't get into in particular, who there's a time in their life when I wish I had acted on my urge to reach out to them and didn't, and it's something that I've regretted for a long time since then. So it goes both ways.
It's a two-way street. I've had a difficult time this year, and when I felt darkest, it's been good to reach out to other people, and I just urge other people to do the same. And Archie does too, apparently.
You can hear Archie in the background, but he had to chime in too. Mm-hmm. Archie the scene stealer.
But let's put that aside and move back to the regular nonsense, I think. With this next letter from Stephen James Arnott Esquire, who writes, "Letter withheld." So
I see what you did there. Classic bit. Fire him.
And
make a fool of us, huh, Stephen?
I was all prepared to make jokes and interrupt people.
I thought Dan was going to stumble and bumble over the words and I could make fun of him, but no, there were none.
Well, there will be a lot of words to stumble over in this next letter.
What about bumble over?
Which comes...
And you'll feel very humble over it.
From Martin, last name withheld.
Oh, the TV show, Martin.
His last name's Lawrence.
Who writes...
His wife, Tisha Campbell.
He's a bad boy. A bad boy too, if you will.
He writes,
as well,
nothing but trouble
from
pages, nothing to lose, nothing but trouble is a different movie.
From the pages of a failed novel about the Flophouse Whaler Company operating out of Nantucket during a few unsuccessful months in the summer of 1839, or as it was known at the time, Whaleview, USA, you'll have a whale of a time. Aboard the ship, the wives' buttocks, first mate Elliot Quicalion was standing amidships, scanning the horizon. "We've not seen a whale since Six Bells, and the crew is growing weary," his squeaky know-it-all voice carried far over the waves.
That's very important information. I mean, it's something you would want to know.
And he was right. Even though the Six Bells was just like a few hours ago, the crew was indeed growing weary, but more so with the gravity of their mission than a lack of large sea-dwelling mammals. For they were not just in search of whale oil to power lamps in San Francisco's red light district. They were out in search of the whale that hurt the knee of their unexciting captain. It was not broken off or anything, but it was still a jarring memory for the poor man.
And who asked him if he was getting better? Nobody.
Captain Dan Daniels McCoy was distraught, and it had now taken the form of a minor sad annoyance. Ugh, he said. At this point, I don't really care. I already lost my knee to one of these animals. Why are we even going on? You didn't really lose it, right? Said Elliot. I mean, it's right there, as he pointed to the functioning, albeit once damaged, knee. Shut up, nerds. A whale has been attracted by Elliot's high-pitched voice, came a voice from the crow's nest. It was Stuart Wellington, known as Stuart There She Blows.
Mm-hmm.
There he yelled down, giggling at the engine. Wait, hold, no. It was, hold on.
Are you okay?
It was Stuart Wellington, known as Stuart.
Oh, okay.
There
then,
she blows.
And then you saw a period, meaning end of sentence, take a breath.
Well,
but you thought it was, what, like a bug or something?
No,
or
I thought it was
crumb?
Like in a positive. Stuart, there she blows, Wellington.
No, I thought,
say.
Yeah, but usually there's punctuation that helps you to avoid problems like that.
Okay. He yelled down.
Oh, I see a crumb from an Oreo. Oh, no, wait, it's a period.
Yeah.
There she blows, he yelled down, giggling.
Shouldn't be eating Oreos all over my story.
I mean, I don't know why there'd be just a...
I haven't eaten an Oreo in 20 days.
Perfectly circular black dot here. But I assume it's a mistake, and I'll continue on with the thought.
There she blows, he yelled down, giggling at the innuendo. Dan would have lit up had he been able to feel anything at that point. Huh, he said with a shrug. Well, I guess we've come this far. Launch the boats, guys. The longboats were hoisted down into the water, and a ragtag crew of interesting but blurry characters set out. The majestic giant didn't have any of it, though, and slammed on, threshed at the boats encroaching upon it, sensing its own mortality. Fuck off, said Stuart, after taking a sip of his beer in his relaxed position at the stern of the fastest boat, his oarsmen being the fiercest. When they saw it was a sperm whale, they had another fit of giggles, and someone yelled, blow me, for no reason. The whale started to sing, making most of the rowers in the boats think they were in a yoga studio or something, and they started to relax. Fuck off, said Stuart again, and took one of their oars and rowing at double speed without even spilling a single drop of his brewski. Dan tried to throw his harpoon, but missed doing...
Take your time. I know you're excited by the action.
Those aren't Oreo crumbs.
No, that's telling you, hey... Give your tongue a break. Every time, think about it this way. Every time you see like a little dot of ink after a bunch of words, that is the writer telling you, time for your tongue's cigarette break. Take a couple seconds.
Dan tried to throw his harpoon, but missed due to being too boring. And his completely healed knee injury still hurting him. Elliot tried, but his constitution was not enough to pierce the layers of fat which guard the skin of any sea mammal. That whale, or indeed this entire ocean, must be made up of some kind of non-Euclidean geometry, said Elliot. Finally, Stuart lugged his flask of whaler's grog into the whale's blowhole, effectively blocking it and inebriating the whale at the same time. We did it, he shouted happily. Rawr, called the call of their sea cat, a type of cat-like fish. It was known as the Flophouse Catfish.
I love that there is a thing called a catfish, yeah. But he's introduced a sea cat.
At that point, their pointless captain was too distracted to care about anything anymore, though, and took a nap instead of revenge. The rest of their crew was too busy getting drunk and saying words that sounded like other words. The drunk whale fish drifted off into the sunset.
Whale fish?
And the drunker whalers drifted back into the legends they came from. And that's how the first whale got drunk, and laughs were had by all. And now you know the rest of the story, says Martin, last name withheld.
Now, I don't understand why Rudyard Kipling cut that from the Just So stories.
Yeah.
It seems like it fits perfectly.
What a lovely adventure we had.
That yeah. was. Everyone took their licks on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? None of us came out unscathed. But I think the one who was the most scathed was Dan. So Dan.
Yeah, did you not
because
pre-read
I was
that?
Both reading the story and I took scathing from you guys.
Yeah,
did you not screen that letter?
That's right.
Okay.
I just, yeah.
You're like, this is a long one. This will eat up a bunch of minutes.
That guy want a Make-A-Wish contest, and the wish was to write a letter into the Flophouse.
I mean, just to write a letter is a wish that he doesn't need an organization to help him with.
He's not that bright.
Wow. Well, thanks everybody for writing in.
Thanks for the gifts.
Thanks for the gifts. this is that was a roller coaster ride of a gift and letter segment.
Yeah. Of emotions, yeah.
Yeah.
But now,
what's the next part, Dan?
It's time for our
when
final
does this purgatory end, Dan?
Yep.
Of the episode, and that is where we recommend movies that we actually liked.
Will I dream when this is over, Elliot?
Only of Jeff Bridges.
Oh, lovely.
But he's going to be kissing you.
Oh, okay. So I don't want to burn those bridges.
No, don't burn them.
Beau Bridges.
Beau Bridges is there too, but he just likes to watch his own movies, starting with The Landlord.
So what do we do now, Dan?
I told you already. We recommend movies that we like.
But I like Seventh Son.
Recommend movies that we like. So after you've already watched Seventh Son and you want to watch something else, yeah, I'm going to recommend you fire up your movie player and you check out a hot new little action joint.
A little piece.
Titled Close Range. Now, Close Range is a micro-budget little action movie directed by Isaac Florentine, starring one Scott Adkins. Not Scott Adsit, like Elliot was about to say.
You got me.
No, I'm talking about the star of Ninja 2, Shadow of a Tear.
We've worked together so much, it's like we finish each other's...
hamburgers.
Did you finish my hamburger?
I did. Why did you leave it out?
You told me a Gremlins took it.
Gremlins?
Yeah. Yeah. He told me a Gremlins, the film, took it.
Yep. A gypsy cursed a Gremlins DVD box to spring to life and steal hamburgers.
They prefer not to be called gypsies.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, that movie, Steal Hamburgers, so sad.
Yeah. You know, we're all steal hamburgers.
Everybody wants some. Hamburger scene from, I don't
know. Is that what a robot would eat? A steel hamburger?
Yeah.
That's right.
So, Close Range stars Scott Adkins.
Scott Adsit.
Scott Adsit. And it is basically a Western that has been adapted to the modern day with a drug cartel that has kidnapped a girl. That girl gets saved by a drifter who turns out to be that girl's uncle. And then they come after her and the uncle because he has a flash drive on the keys that he used to release her from her bonds. Now, Scott Adkins, basically this is a super cheapo, low budget movie. But all the money is on the action scenes. The action choreography is super great. They go way out of their way to introduce these cartel bad guys, including giving about a dozen guys like a title card. So you're like, oh, wow, that guy's named Lobo. That guy's named Javier. Like all these cool dudes. And in my head, I'm like, I don't know why they're taking all this time. Scott Adkins is just going to destroy them all. And he totally does. He annihilates all of them. The two best scenes I'm briefly going to touch on. One is the moment when Scott Adkins, Drifter, gets cornered by a corrupt cop. And then they, in turn, both get cornered by some cartel guys. And the cops are like, are those some friends of yours? And Scott Adkins, with no comedic timing, says, I ain't got no fucking friends, which is great. And then at the end of the movie, he does, while fighting a guy, kill a guy by stabbing him in the taint.
What?
So go watch it, Close Range.
I mean, you got to watch it before it wins all the Oscars.
Exactly.
I want to recommend a movie called Diary of a Teenage Girl, which was based on...
It's a Tyler Perry movie, right?
That's right. It's based on some cartoons by... some semi-autobiographical cartoons by Phoebe Gluckner. And it's a little... it's a little difficult.
A little
it's,
bit country?
It's a little... it's a little rough. I mean, it's about... a relationship largely.
I asked my dog saw it and I asked him how it was and he said rough.
I mean,
that joke courtesy of first grade.
In
it's
large
weird,
part,
Rolf can talk quite a bit.
No, Rolf said it was rough. It was very rough. Wow. It was difficult to sit through at times, but worth it.
I mean,
then he played the piano.
A big part of the movie is about the relationship between this underage girl and her mother's boyfriend. And it's a tough movie because it, you know, it does not shy away from the fact that this man is a predator in a lot of ways. Who's
like a, like an alien who hunts down mercenaries. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the point of the podcast.
Their species name is pronounced Yautja.
that he is preying
on her.
This is an inappropriate relationship, and it's wrong for him to do that.
But it also does not shy away from the degree to which she, as someone who is desperate for affection, perhaps wrongly like welcomes this attention from a predator. Mm-hmm. And but it's an interesting movie about this young girl's like budding sexuality and like the places it leads her, and it is ultimately sort of inspiring, like what she learns from everything that happens, and the fact that she's able to translate it through her artwork. And it's got great performances from all of the primary cast members. And it's just, I got a lot of screeners, from the Writers Guild. And this was, I think, the one that I liked the most of all of the quote-unquote awards movies.
More than Furious 7,
yeah.
Which we also were sent to screen before.
Yeah, that and Jurassic World were the most baffling screeners.
I'm going to say I'm really glad that you managed to slip a little bit of humble brag in there, Dan.
No, it was not a humble brag. It was just...
You know,
as
someone who helps decide the very prestigious Writers Guild
honestly,
awards.
Like, the reason I slipped that in was, like, I got a lot of movies that I thought I was going to like a lot more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I was not impressed by a lot of the movies that were supposed to impress me.
Yeah, it was a disappointing year.
But Diary of a Teenage Girl, I liked a lot. So that's my recommendation.
So Dan says, read A Teenage Girl's Diary. Just break into her room. And I'm going to recommend a movie that I still haven't seen, that movie Selma. Mm-hmm. That people liked, but I watched a different movie.
I mean, a lot of people liked it.
But I watched A Fish Called Selma, the Simpsons episode. Yeah.
But I watched...
It was pretty funny.
movie by the
great
same...
Phil Hartman episode. Yeah.
By the same director, Ava DuVernay. Her earlier film, Middle of Nowhere, which is about a woman who is a med student, but her education and kind of her life have fallen apart because her husband is in jail. And this has kind of taken over her life, the process of trying to see him in jail, trying to get him out of jail, and the fact that he is not particularly cooperative in these things, and that his being there brings the worst out of him. And she begins a possible relationship with a bus driver played by David Oyelowo. And
oh, great.
And he's really good in it. And it was just like, but at the same time, she's dealing with issues with her mother, and there's a feeling of people trying not to make the mistakes they've seen others make or have made themselves or seeing others make in front of them, but being unable to figure out how to avoid making those mistakes. And I just found it to be a really good, touching movie.
Good.
It's called Middle of Nowhere.
Three very similar recommendations.
Yeah. I mean, in all of them, somebody is killed by being stabbed in the taint.
Yep. The great thing, I don't know why I liked it so much.
I know why you liked it so
Wait,
much.
Let me, okay. Now that I've composed myself. So after the guy gets stabbed in the taint and his lifeless body falls to the ground, at some point to be interred in the ground.
As dust to dust, we are but ashes.
Yeah. But when he falls down to the ground, you can actually see that his jeans, like they made the trouble of like tearing his jeans open in the crotch. And I'm like, that's some good costuming work. A lesser movie would just put a red stain on his jeans, but they're like, nope, we want to rip the jeans.
You know what? I know this is a low budget film, but we can afford the $10 for another pair of pants.
Those are Costco jeans, Elliot. They're like $15.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So
$50, no craft services today, everybody. Give me back your bagels.
I said $15.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said $50.
No, $15.
Like, those aren't Levi's jeans, Elliot. Those aren't bootcut Levi's jeans,
these are
504s.
These are not diesel jeans.
Sure. Whoa, they still make diesel jeans?
They still advertise them.
Okay.
Vin Diesel jeans.
Sure. If you're going to be witch hunting, Street Racing.
Pitch Darken.
Triple Xen.
Being sad about Paul Walker and
Street.
All right, why would you go there?
Everybody
why would
is.
You go there? I don't know. Well, we're talking about his many roles, and you got to bring in a
Street
Sharkin. Street Sharkin, like in that video.
Yep.
Shark Streetin.
Mm-hmm. Dragon Dungeonin.
Witch Hunting.
That was the first thing he said.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is the first one.
I think it brings us all the way back around. It's like an Ouroboros.
Look, I wasn't paying attention because it was nonsense.
Yeah, oh, good point. That's a very good point.
Basically the podcast.
I just wanted to say this has been rare episode of the podcast.
An emotional roller coaster of an episode.
An episode where we all liked the movie for once.
Which meant we didn't have much to say about it, which is
so we dedicated our time to unwrapping gifts.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this gift-receiving podcast.
Unboxing.
Here on the Box show. House.
You can only, just picture in your head Elliot tearing into that paper with childlike glee.
Well, a cat continues to try to jump on me, and I bat it away with my fists.
And your only defense is throwing that paper on the ground so the cat can make a weird nest out of it.
Which it did.
Yeah.
And that was adorable.
Raised its babies.
Yeah.
So what do we do now in the podcast?
We answer letters?
No, we did that already.
Before we sign off real quick, I'd just like to promote a little thing.
Called love.
It's fifth element.
It's a crazy little thing. I'm addicted to
you
it.
You can't buy me that.
You might as well face it.
Do not buy it from me.
There's a book of it, but nobody knows who wrote it.
Mm-hmm. You can eat, you can pray, and you can do this thing. these are like
for it?
This is like Jeopardy questions for the love category.
A ninth potion.
Potions 1 through 8, do not drink them. They will turn you into a total hide.
Now, what do you want to promote?
Oh, I just want to promote, in addition to doing this lovely podcast, I also do another edition of lovely podcast.
That's what this is all about?
I haven't done this before. So I've been doing a little podcast called Till Death Do Us Party. I'm not going to explain how to spell that.
No, it's spelled in the stupidest
you
way you
can imagine.
You
better know how to explain how to spell it because it
took me so long. I stared at the fucking title for so long before I understood the pun behind it.
Yeah.
It's a Def Leppard podcast, so Till Death Do Us Party.
So it's spelled T-I-L-L space D-E-F space D-O space U-S. Not United States, but just U.S.
Yeah, just the word us.
Space, P-P-A-R-D-Y.
Yeah.
Till death
do
us party.
The dumbest way you could possibly spell anything.
if you put into iTunes podcast search, T-I-L-L space D-E-F, it's the first thing that pops up.
Go fucking figure.
So it's an educational podcast about the band Def Leppard. We
it's primarily educational.
Yep.
It's for the kids.
Alexander Smith and I have been going through the Def Leppard discography and have been exploring all of the kind of strange themes that are present in all the music of Def Leppard. Check it out.
All right.
That ends the housework section of this podcast.
And yeah. I'd like to promote.
Oh, housework back on.
Just,
love.
Going out and, be loving somebody.
Oh, sure.
Just feel love, express love within reason and within boundaries. Okay. Love responsibly.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Now we can do our favorite part of the podcast, which is signing
letters.
Sure. Summary of movie.
Now tonight we watch Seventh Son. This is the story of Seventh
Son.
For
the Flop
House.
You're
doing better this time.
Yeah,
I have been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
At this point, I don't even know if I'm Elliot Kalin anymore.
Good night, everyone.
Podcast-O-Matic.
Just pop the podcast in the Podcast-O-Matic.
Sitting on new chairs tonight.
Oh, yeah.
They're pretty good.
Not like chumps.
I feel like I have to slouch more
like champs.
Folding chairs like assholes.
These
not anymore.
Chairs don't fold.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I don't know if I like this escalating battle over who has control of Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I mean it's clearly not us.
Yeah, it's not us.
No, that's
we
what I don't
have
like
control
about it.
Very little.
That's the way it works.
That's the way it works, Dan says. That's the way it works. You wrote them, we read them. You wrote them, we read them. That's the way it works. How does it work? Glad that you asked. As Dan said, I'll refer you to his comments.
That's how it works.
So,
that you write them, and then we read them. That's how it works. That's how it works. That you write them, and then we read them. That's how it works. Letters escaped before a live studio audience of one cat.
So speaking of birthdays.
Speaking of birthdays, Dan was talking about. You're born, and that's the day that you celebrate. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Anything you need to know about how something works, ask me, and I'll sing it to you. Unless it's really complicated, made out of words that don't rhyme so well. In which case, don't know if I can help you so well, but I'll try. Till I die. That's how it works.
It's from Noah.
Now the breakdown part where it's spoken word. That's how it works. We're going to work it now. Tell you how it works with the last letter. That's how it works. We're going to work it now. Tell you how it works with the last letter.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Podcasts.
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 They're audio programs that
tell smart stories
in innovative ways
using editing techniques like this.
Like this.
Like this. Like this. Like this.
But let's face it, all that smart stuff can be exhausting.
That's where Stop Podcasting Yourself comes in.
It's so stupid.
It's just two stupid dinguses
being dumb idiot jerks for 90 minutes.
Stop Podcasting Yourself.
The stupid show that smart people love.
Find it on iTunes
or MaximumFun.org.